So as we were just sitting here now, I was hearing the sound of the tarp in the wind and remembering putting it up yesterday and wondering together if we would end up using it or not, since, you know, the day before it had been put up so beautifully and not used. And it ties into what I'd like to speak about today, something we've actually spoken about quite a bit, but to go into a bit more deeply into. We've spoken about it so far in the retreat as impermanence. The Pali word is anicca, and it's translated in many ways. Impermanence is the most common. It's also often translated as uncertainty. And Joseph Goldstein, who's a senior teacher in our tradition from the US, likes to speak about it as anything can happen at any time. Anything can happen at any time. This is actually an insight he had when he was on a long retreat once. And I don't know how it affects you, but for me, whenever I hear it, I say it, it's like, yes, that just really is so true. You know, anything can happen at any time. And of course, in a situation like this, on a retreat like this, we really feel that very clearly. You know, the changeability of the weather, the fact that, you know, we may put a lot of effort into putting something up and we don't know if it's going to be needed or not, and how it's going to be used. Are we going to be happy that we didn't use it or not? Probably yes in this case. So we can see this very clearly, this uncertainty, this anything can happen at any time, this anicca, in a situation like this. But when we look at our lives in general, when we look at below the surface, just a little bit deeply. If you're happy to sit behind me, then you can stay there. But if it's just out of embarrassment, you're welcome to move anywhere also. I like having you at my back. So when we look at our lives, we see that this aspect, uncertainty, anything can happen at any time, is actually always there. Always there. And we see that in our personal lives, and we see that in the world. The changes, the flows, the uncertainty. The fact that it's very difficult to understand why things happen in certain ways. You know, some of you may know yesterday was the referendum in Britain. And, you know, of course we have the privilege here of not knowing the results, but just being in the UK and watching the shift, you know, from a clear, oh, you know, of course it's going to stay, we're going to stay in the UK, to nobody knows, to no one knows what the results will be, with no clear understanding of why that is, you know. Why are people changing their minds in that way? Doesn't make any sense, but it's happening. Sorry, a bit of views and opinions here. But when we look, you know, at the situations in the world and at our personal lives, we see that anything can happen at any time. Ooh, sorry. Mosquito can fly into your ear. And so, you know, climate change, our own personal difficulties, all of these unknowns, all of this uncertainty, always there. And yet, how closely do we live to that truth? You know, right now, it's very obvious when we think about it. We say, yeah, of course. I mean, I doubt anyone wants to argue about it, but you're welcome to if you want. You can have a debate. And yet how often do we actually live with that truth really clear in us? You know, us as individuals and our societies as a whole, societies that we're part of. You know, rather the habitual way, the way we're taught, is to try and hold on, to try and grasp, to try and make things solid and secure and certain and permanent. And our whole societies are built on that, you know, the denial part. No, climate change isn't happening. Carry on business as usual. It's the Chinese and the Indians. That's the problem, you know. If they didn't want to live as we do, if they didn't want to have cars and mobile phones, there'd be no problem with climate change. You know, denial, blame, putting it on the other. It's not happening. We're not destroying the planet. The future isn't uncertain. You know, it's a really clear example of that. So denial and searching for security. You know, if I get a good job, if I get a good place to live, if I find the right partner. Not that these things aren't important and we shouldn't, you know, aspire to some of them. There's nothing wrong with that. But if we put our sense of security on that, if we think that that is going to give us certainty, then what's going to happen if someone else gets that job? What's going to happen if the perfect partner doesn't think we're the perfect partner? What's going to happen if we get sick? Or someone else that we love does? You know, these aren't imaginary scenarios. These are things that are most likely to happen to us, at least some of them in our lives. We're not always going to get what we want or what we think is going to make us happy. That's the truth of anicca, that's the truth of uncertainty. And so we can question, you know, are these ways that we know, are these ways that our societies, our families are offering to us as ways of living with uncertainty, are they effective? Is that what we want, or do we want something else? And it really is a question. Is that what we want, or do we want something else? Is something else possible for us? So when we start to accept that this issue of uncertainty, of impermanence, of anything can happen at any time, is at the core of being human. Actually, at the core of being a living being, not just humans. When we start to accept that, then some more possibilities unfold, some more possibilities open. And Dharma teachings offer a radically different approach. So instead of denial, instead of searching for security in what we can get, what we can find in external things, we're invited to actually turn face on towards uncertainty. And, you know, Nathan was doing that thing yesterday in the talk, so I'm also going to do a thing, which is if we kind of feel what the normal, what the usual habitual way we have of dealing with uncertainty is, it's something like this. You know, for you guys, it's something like this. You know, we're turning away, we're closing our eyes, we're like, no. I'll look somewhere else, you know, I won't see it. And what Dharma teachings are inviting us to do is actually look straight on. Just, okay, anything can happen. At any time. Anything can happen at any time. The weather forecast can say we're going to get 9 millimeters of rain, and we end up getting very little. You know, that can happen. Equally, the opposite could happen. You know, anything could happen. What happens when we turn to that, when we just open to it? You know, and look at it like we're looking at this wide open view. Take it all in. You know, we can see the clouds, we can see the sunshine, we can see the forest, we can see the bare hilltops, we can see the wholeness, we can see the variety. And one really important aspect of this attitude of facing uncertainty directly is that we let go of this natural momentum that we have to try and fix and solve and control. And we kind of just sit back. Can we just be with it? That's the first step. Just be with it. And sometimes, you know, things can be really hard. It's not easy. But can we really give it our best? So facing it, looking at it, opening to it, we can discover that we can live well with this truth. We can live well. It doesn't mean that, you know, we give up on trying to be happy because everything's changing anyway, so why bother? It's actually the opposite. We stop using up all our energy on resisting and denying and trying to control, and we get more energy to live. So when we face, one teacher, Joanna Macy, she says, when we face the mess of uncertainty, the mess of, you know, the world, maybe the mess of our personal lives, at least parts of them must be messy. No one's got it all perfect. So when we face it, and we know the future is uncertain, then we also open to the fact that what we do with this uncertainty matters, and that we have a choice. This is really important. Sometimes we can take this understanding, we can take this teaching of anything can happen at any time, things are impermanent and uncertain, to mean that what we do doesn't matter. But it's the opposite. We free up energy and we have choice. And we can actually open to the gifts. We can open to the gifts of Anicca. We can open to the gifts of living closely with this kind of ground-shaking reality of being a human being. So in a way, when we open to uncertainty, we also open to possibility. And this is really important. I remember reading one time, I don't remember who it was, but someone describing kind of going through a period of really reflecting a lot about impermanence and getting quite down about it, getting quite depressed. And then his teenage daughter came up to him and said, "Dad, don't get depressed about uncertainty and impermanence. If there was no impermanence, I would never grow." You know, so can we see it like that? The possibility. It's what makes things possible. And in nature, we see it, you know, that, you know, when in these kind of environments, these trees that sometimes grow like this, you know, that's the possibility. No one told them all trees need to grow up. If there's a lot of wind, they change. So there's possibility. And so we face anicca, we face uncertainty, we face anything can happen at any time. We understand that we have a choice and that our involvement matters. It's important. And we also know that with this involvement, with acknowledging that our choices have impact, we have no control of their outcomes. And again, that can be scary, but it's also so beautiful. So we act from the wish to do right, to do what's nourishing, to do what's supportive. But we know it's not up to us. And it can also really help us gather our attention, gather ourselves towards what's important. In the Jewish tradition, there's a beautiful saying. I can't even remember it in Hebrew, so give me a second. Yeah, it's something like, it isn't your responsibility, or it isn't your duty. Yeah, it isn't your duty to finish the work that needs to be done. But it's your responsibility to take part. Does that make sense? Mm. So having the big view, we are part of this flow of uncertainty. So our actions, our choices, our practice, our lives, it's not necessarily about finding all the answers, fixing everything. But it's about doing our best in our personal lives and in the world. And that can really motivate us, understanding this. It can motivate us. It can connect us to our resources, to what we have to offer. It can help us connect to our intentions and our aspirations. Because it means that they have value. So many times, because we don't know, we also feel not good enough. Or we think that we're embarrassed about our intentions, or we feel that we can't actually bring them into fruition. We might even be shy about caring. And so this, anything can happen at any time, can help us gather our attention, gather our intention, connect our aspiration, connect to our own goodness and our wish to be of use in the world. This looking directly at uncertainty, at anything can happen at any time, also brings us into contact with the present moment. It brings us into direct knowing of what's here and now. You know, it's like, again, gathering ourselves from, I'll do this, so I'll do that, so I'll get that, so he'll say that, so she'll say that, so then that'll happen, and I'll get this, and he'll, whatever, to hear. Don't know. Don't know. Don't know. Yeah? Connects us back to this present moment, to what is here. Then we see what is here. This beautiful person in my life that I didn't really pay attention to because I was so busy. or the job that I have that maybe doesn't earn that much money or doesn't have that prestige, but actually really brings me joy, or whatever it is, right here. And then connecting to intentions and making choices, it's like a bridge to the future. So it's not a present moment that is disconnected from past, from what has been, or from future, from what will be. It's a present moment that's part of the flow of life. The American teacher Joanna Macy tells a beautiful story of that really illustrates this, from traveling in Tibet some years ago. And she came across a group of monks that were rebuilding their monastery that had been destroyed by the Chinese authorities. And she said, you know, what's going on? And they said, oh, you know, so many years ago, the Chinese destroyed our monastery and we had to go here and there. And now they've given us permission to rebuild the monastery again. So that's what we're doing. And she said to them, well, you know, did they promise that once the monastery's built, they won't destroy it again? And the monk said, no. And even if they did promise, you know, we don't know that they would necessarily keep that. And she said, well, aren't you afraid that you'll put all this energy into rebuilding your monastery and then the Chinese authorities will come and destroy it again? And the monk said, well, we know it's a possibility. Anything can happen at any time, even more when you're under military occupation. But if we don't rebuild the monastery, we won't have a monastery. So we just keep doing it. So we keep doing what we have to do. Because if we don't do it, it's not going to happen. And at the same time, we don't attach our sense of security to that. So when things change, when uncertainty happens, when the monastery may get demolished again, or the monks may get arrested, or whatever might happen, that doesn't destroy that sense of inner resilience and inner strength. And this can be a beautiful practice for us. It can be a beautiful practice of really staying true to what we know is important. You know, it's what we do on the cushion all the time. The mind goes and we bring it back. The mind goes and we bring it back. You know, if we sat in meditation and said, oh, I'm only going to meditate if my mind cooperates, not much would happen. But we accept the impermanent state of the mind, the fact that it does its own thing, and the fact that coming back to the breath or the body or whatever practice we're doing, the fact that we're coming back has value. It's creating a momentum of presence, a momentum of kindness that is of real value to us in our lives. And you'll be surprised, it comes back to us. You know, we're cultivating something that is then available to us in so many situations just by that simple thing of doing what needs to be done. Coming back to the breath. Coming back to the breath. Had an example of this on one of our retreats for many years. This is the retreat that we do in a leprosy community in India. And it's a work retreat. And there's a young woman in the old people's home, which is where we do a lot of our service work. So it's an old people's home for people with leprosy, part of the community, which includes people of all ages. And like an old people's home in any country that I've been to, it's kind of rejected. It's kind of the place where people don't come much. And so within this old people's home, in one of the rooms, was a young woman, about about 22 or 3 when we first met her, with very severe arthritis, lying on a bed, surrounded by elderly women, with very little stimulation and not a very good quality of care. And so every year when our group would come for the work retreat, people in the group would be very touched, and a lot of attention would go to this woman, young woman, Jyoti. And every year, Nathan, myself, and another friend of ours, Dave, who's come every year to this retreat since Jyoti's been there, would really try to find a solution to her situation, would really try to find a better carer, a better bed, a better wheelchair, a better system. And we realized, probably even in the first year that we tried to do this, certainly by the second, that we would probably end up leaving yet again and her situation wouldn't change. But that didn't mean that we stopped trying. So every year we'd go through a similar process of really, you know, putting a lot of time and energy and effort and money also into trying to change the situation. Knowing that whether it happened or not wasn't completely up to us. But if we didn't try, it wouldn't happen. And so, you know, for me, that's always been a real strong practice and example of really doing everything we could. And yet knowing it's not in our hands. It's not in our hands. 2 years ago, we stayed an extra week to try and train her attendant, her carer, to use a wheelchair that someone else from the group had bought, which would have transformed her life. And we were doing it, and the carer was doing it. And after a few days, we said to the carer, probably 65-year-old woman with severe leprosy herself, "So you're doing it so well. Do you think you could do it when we leave?" And she said, "No way. No way. I'm sure I'll make mistakes." And so seeing that process, doing the best we can, seeing that also many times other people are doing the best they can. And yet continuing, year after year. To try. So we need a strength of intention when we face uncertainty in our lives. We need a strength of intention like those monks that Joanna Macy was speaking about. To understand if we don't do it, it won't happen. But there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees. So Nathan was speaking yesterday about bodhicitta. And there's no better intention than that. Bodhicitta, this desire to be of service, this desire to for our lives to be for the welfare of others. Whether those others are our family, the people we know, the people we love, and then expanding ourselves, of course, and then expanding that to people we know and people we don't know. Because that is such a personal intention and at the same time so impersonal, so inclusive, that it connects to the source of love, of life, of compassion, of wisdom that Nathan was speaking about. And it's something we can count on. So in this life, in this world of uncertainty, of anicca, of anything can happen at any time, we are capable of cultivating such strong bodhicitta that becomes a resource for us. We only have to look at the Dalai Lama to know it's possible. And there's many others like him, a little bit less famous, some of them. One image in Dharma teachings of this quality of bodhicitta is like a flame in the heart. So it can be just a little spark. And through practice, we nourish it so the fire grows. And it becomes something that can then illuminate our lives and illuminate the life of others. It can guide us. It can be like a guiding light and shine through our actions also. So whenever we prioritize compassion, when we cultivate wisdom, when we come back to the breath as an act of kindness, every time we do that, we're nourishing that flame. We're turning that spark into a fire. So this is a quote from Joanna Macy, who says, "What helps us face this mess, which is the life of beings on planet Earth, is the knowledge that each of us has something significant to offer, a contribution to make." In rising to the challenges that are presented to us, we discover something precious that both enriches our lives and adds to the healing of our world. We discover the joy and the beauty within the pain and the uncertainty. Like a pearl inside an oyster, it shines forth. We grow and we offer our gifts to the world. Like a pearl inside an oyster. The pain and the beauty coexisting in this world. Shining through. So this first bit is really important to remember. The fact that we all have something to offer. We all have something to offer. And what we have to offer is invaluable, is precious. We each have a contribution to make life a more nourishing form for everyone, for all beings, including ourselves. I'd just like to end with one more story that hopefully illustrates this a little bit from the leprosy community that we work in. So this happened on the last retreat in December. So like I said, we work a lot in the old people's homes. And there's a section for men and a section for women. And we do very simple things there, like brushing hair, cutting nails, very basic massage and oiling of stiff limbs and dry skin and, you know, all kinds of aches and pains. And since we've been doing this since 2004, we've got a good relationship going there. So one of the things, so this story was towards the end of our stay this last time. And I was going through the whole place, through each room, doing an inventory for, every year we buy them these mosquito repellent machines with liquid to last them the whole year because there's a big issue of mosquitoes there. So I was doing an inventory to see what machines were still working and how much liquid each room needed. And I was using my smartphone to make the list, you know, as we do, right? Going through and making notes. And I was right at the end of going through the whole place. And I was coming into one of the rooms. And one of the old gentlemen who I've known since we first came there, a beautiful, beautiful, tall, graceful man with this long hair and long beard, very dignified. He was just coming out of his room as I was going in. And he saw my phone. And his face lit up. And he asked me if he could use it to phone his son. And I said, sure, of course, you know. So he shuffled out to the courtyard and sat down. And I followed him. And he was wearing a dhoti, which is the traditional dress. It's a long, long piece of cloth that men have wrapped around a few times in that part of India. It's very, very long. It's not like a lungi, for people who know lungis, and then tied through the legs. Anyway, and one of the corners is tied together. And that's where all his valuable things were. The women are the same with the saris. So in, it's a little knot, and in there is a little plastic bag. And in the plastic bag are all the precious possessions, like phone number of his son and, you know, a few hundred rupees. And it's the key to his little box where he locks his other things, all the little things that he keeps on his person. And so he took that out and he took out the card and he was reading it and finding the right number and pointing the number to me. And a few other guys were joining in the happening and giving advice, which is very helpful, by the way. And so I dialed for him, and then someone answered and I gave him the phone, but he couldn't hear, and someone else said, I'll put it on speaker. So I did, and finally he was talking to his son, and we could all hear because it was on speaker. And the joy in his son's voice and the joy in his face was just incredible. Such a simple thing, a phone call. And I was looking at him and just feeling this huge wave of joy coming into my heart. And then I looked up and I saw the other guys that had been helping to make this happen, also listening to the conversation, completely radiant with joy, as if it was their son that they were speaking to. And this was, it was a complete, Anna was there when I came back, you might remember. I was just like, so big, so open, so full of joy and love, just from that simple thing. And when he finished the phone call, he thanked me. And then he offered me his rupees to pay. Which, yeah, kind of shattered my heart even more into pieces. So sometimes, you know, we think what we're doing is taking inventory of mosquito repellent machines. And actually we're there to help someone make a phone call and speak to their son and bring joy and bring love. And just staying open to whatever comes through us. What we receive is much more than what we offer. That's guaranteed. When we're rooted in bodhicitta, when we're rooted in this intention for little acts of kindness, for cultivating compassion, for nourishing wisdom and presence. So let's just have a few quiet minutes together to bring this to a close. So may our retreat together continue to open us to the gifts of uncertainty. Continue to reveal for us our place in the world and our possibilities, the preciousness of what we have to offer to each other, to this planet, to all beings, wherever they are. So thank you for your listening and your presence.